This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. For today's arts edition of the program, we're joined by Naples-based singer, songwriter, and guitarist Elizabeth Lockhart, who will perform live in studio. Lockhart's traditional folk compositions include elements of classical, world, pop, and blues. Her soulful vocals, distinctive picking style, guitar playing, and writing style, which is both evocative and narrative, invite listeners on an intensely personal journey of love, from loss and tragedy to ultimate redemption. The first single from the new album, Lifer, dropped on March 1st, and she will perform a special concert with a full band on March 30th at Fit and Fuel Cafe in Naples to celebrate the release of this debut 12-song album. In addition to hearing her perform live on today's show, we'll also explore Lockhart's approach to writing new songs and her unique lifelong journey through music, which has taken her all over the globe, from the Midwest to Morocco and from France to Florida. It also includes time performing as a professional opera singer. The full album has not officially dropped yet, but will be available in CD and on vinyl, and you can check out selections of her music on her website. That's ElizabethLockhartMusic.com. It's also available on iTunes, Apple Music, Spotify, Bandcamp, Google Play, Reverb Nation, CD Baby, or basically anywhere else you can get your music streaming. Elizabeth Lockhart, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Hi, thank you for having me, John. I really appreciate it.
And as always, I invite listeners to join the conversation. The number to call is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. And before we get into any conversational portions of the show, let's go ahead and kick things off with a song. Elizabeth, tell us what we're going to hear first and tell us a little about it by way of introduction.
This song is called The Trees They Do Grow High. It is not one of my original compositions, but a traditional ballad, which I pretty much got me started writing my own songs. It is supposedly from Scotland, but some say it's from England. It's so old that people don't really know where it's from.
Oh.
It is an interesting song because it is about a arranged marriage between a girl of 24 and a boy of 12. So,
oh, wow. Okay.
So that's an original material matter. But basically the ending of the story really ends up where she has to kind of make herself fall in love, and then thus she does, and they have a son, and then he unfortunately passes away. So it's, for me, it's about don't waste your time with anybody. Appreciate today, live your life to the fullest right now, because, and with the people that you love.
All right, let's hear it.
All right.
They do grow high, and the leaves they do grow green. Many is the time my own true love I've seen. Oh, many an hour I've watched him all alone. He's young, but he's daily growing. Father, dear father, you've done me great wrong. You've married me to a boy who is too young. Oh, I'm twice 12 and he's but 14. He's young, but he's daily growing. Daughter, dear daughter, oh, I have done you no great wrong. Well, I've married you and he'll make a law. We'll send him to college for 1 year yet. I'll tie blue ribbons all around his head to let the maidens know he's married. One day I was looking o'er my father's castle wall. I spied all the boys a-playing with the ball. My own of them all. He's young, but he's daily growing.
Absolutely beautiful. Our guest today is Elizabeth Lockhart, and we've just heard her performing live in studio. That song was The Trees, They Do Grow High, and that song will be available on her new upcoming album, Master Key, which will drop on March 30th, and luckily we're going to get to hear her perform throughout today's show. Again, thank you so much. Beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you.
I wanted to talk about, you know, the genre or the genres of music that you've come to embrace. Because I think when most people hear the term folk music, they're probably not thinking about precisely what you do, maybe something more, you know, in the Americana vein. Can you describe a little bit about the music that you sort of gravitate towards and some of the history behind that music?
Well, I really love traditional folk music, the ballad style in particular, which is usually telling a story. I like the historical aspect of it. I particularly like songs from that have a derivative from Scotland and England. I have kind of they were passed down, of course, to the Appalachian region in North Carolina. It's great to visit there, as there is you can really go into some folk museums that have books of collected songs. In particular, one of my favorite song collectors would be John Jacob Niles. If you haven't ever heard of him, he's an amazing person to check out. And he ended up collecting a lot of these songs, and then he also would write in ballad style as well. So he has been a big influence on me, because I really, in the past 2 years, I have contemporary pieces that I write, but I really have taken my first love, which are these historical songs, and modernized them just a bit, written in that style, but put more of a modern lyric to them. So it's a real pleasure to write in that vein.
Interesting. And you know, I mentioned in the introduction that your music also blends elements of world music. Tell me about you know that influence in your music. Was that at least in part and inspired by your time in places like Morocco?
Definitely. I think that just hearing a different scale pattern mm-hmm. on a regular basis is really been important to my development as a musician. Maybe I would like to go there more and experiment with that Arabic scale and incorporate and write more music like that. I was in a world music project that I created with some other musicians in the local area and from Colombia. South America. And that was a real exciting time. We would write in different languages, in French and or part in French and part in English. It's also been exciting. I've taken some of those songs from that old project and incorporated them into, well, rearranged them for just guitar. And one of those is on the new album, and it's called Birdwatcher. So it's partly in French and partly in English.
Are either of those projects still around in the Naples area?
They are not. I really only have time to do this. It's a full-time job. Some people are like, well, what do you do all day? And, yeah. You know, when you're a folk musician, you're often in charge of everything from booking to writing the music to performing the music to finding opportunities elsewhere, to going to Folk Alliance conferences. The job is endless, really. There's always something to do, but it's definitely my passion. And so all of that business side of the work, really, I get to do it, is what I say now. So
right. Well, let's go back to the beginning. You know, you're pretty much a lifelong musician and performer. You know, tell me about singing during your childhood, because I kind of get the impression that, you know, early on you sort of discovered you somewhat naturally have this very mature sounding voice as a young girl.
I did, and it was a really nice blessing for my mom, as she was one of those poor people that had a bad experience in choir when she sang. I think she was in elementary school, and they asked her not to sing in one of the concerts. And so for her, she never sang again. And I mean, who knows if they can sing at age 5? I mean, no one, right? So that was a real sad thing for me. And I think she also always wanted to be a performer. She got into dance and so on. And so when I first auditioned for my first solo and got it and got up and performed, I don't think anybody quite expected. I was sort of like a Charlotte Church kind of person, where, you know, I just opened my mouth and I was completely unaware of it, but I had
tiny
a very
frame, huge voice. Yeah.
I had a very rich, deep voice, and once I saw the power that really it impacted people, and that is a connection that I think as humans we're always longing for, and to move one another, and so that was really, really an amazing experience, and something I was blessed to have in my childhood. Also, it's just a healing tool. I hope that everybody has something like music, because if I'm having a bad day, I can sit down and I can feel that, and that vibration goes through your whole body, and you emerge on the other side of a song in a way better mood.
And, you know, as you grew into a teen, you continued singing, doing theater, even performing with some rock bands. And you continued that in college, studying voice. And then after that, studying opera performance in North Carolina. And you actually sang, you know, professionally with an opera company in Piedmont, or the Piedmont Opera, but for just one season. Tell me about, I guess, first, what attracted you to opera, and why, after all that, you decided to part ways with opera after one season.
I was enamored with the theater altogether, the whole experience of the theater, from the dancers to the set design to the costumes, the makeup, and the music, most of all. And so opera sort of encompassed all that. I felt like I would be able to be around all of those things all the time. And since I really couldn't decide which I liked best, I think that opera was a real fit for me. Also, you know, my voice was fairly operatic.
Yeah.
And so at that point, it just made sense for me to go that direction. And I also think it was something, you know, my parents were very proud that I was an opera singer. And so that always leads us, I think, in our youth. It sort of puts us in a certain direction, what's appropriate with your parents. After one season there, though, I realized that I probably was too social of a person to have that kind of discipline. The kind of discipline it takes to be an opera singer, especially a soprano, is something. I have utmost respect for all those women that get out there and do that. It's a high perfection rate. I really wasn't into being perfect. I liked human flaws, and I also liked the freedom that I had in creating something. I like the creation process most of all, and that was where the opera really lacked for me, is even in my stage direction, I would get sort of a very specific direction from the director, and you were to follow that. And
like no room for your own interpretation.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's go ahead and hear another song, and then I want to find out more about how you went from opera to discovering the music you do now. But before then, again, just tell us what our second song is going to be and maybe tell us a little bit about it.
Sure. I'm going to tune up, if you don't mind,
of
just
course.
To make sure I don't have a flat note for you all today. Lifer is the next song, and it is really about, in the new age of Facebook and all of our social media, it's kind of hard to get away from people. And so, not that that's a bad thing. So we all have experiences, I think, of reconnecting with people from our past because of that. And
this is the single that dropped last week, correct?
It is. It is. And so this was just about a lifelong friend that reemerged into my life and really changed it for the better. I probably wouldn't be here today if not. So this is what this song is about, is just love never changes. It stays the same. You can see somebody. It's about that old friend that you see them 20 years later, and it's like you never were apart. And this is Lifer.
Truly,
Beautiful. That was Lifer, a song by our guest today, Elizabeth Lockhart. And that song, the single, was released last week and is available just about anywhere you can think of to stream music from. It'll be included on her new debut solo album, Master Key, which is set for release at the end of the month. And Lockhart will be playing an album release party March 30th at Fit and Fuel Cafe in Naples. And as a reminder, listeners can join our conversation by calling 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. And again, you know, we just came from the opera background, so I'm really curious about how you discovered, you know, these forms of music that you've come to embrace now.
Joan Baez.
All right.
Two words. Joan Baez, Bob Dylan. My husband at the time was a big Bob Dylan fan, and so he shared that with me. And through Bob, I found Joan, who personally I think should have won the Nobel Peace Prize. But we go Joan. Very empowered woman. Model, but when I heard her, I really knew instantly that this was my genre. Also, I attended way back when the Kerrville Folk Festival in Kerrville, Texas, which is an amazing time. I think it's a 28-day festival. It's the longest folk festival that there is. And last year, I attended the entire time, and you get together at campfires all around the campus there, or the campground, and it goes, you know, sometimes till 2 or 3 in the morning or later, and you never know who you're going to be sitting next to at a place like that. You have anybody from Iris DeMent who may show up to Susan Werner, and I also heard Susan Werner there, and she was a big influence. If you haven't heard her, I would check out her music. She does a lot of cross things with musical theater. I think she's actually currently writing a musical theater piece right now. But hearing her, I think she has a similar background to me. And that really set the tone for the rest of, you know, my songwriting career.
Excellent. I can definitely empathize with what you're talking about. I mean, that at music festivals around the campfire, I mean, forget the headliner. That's where the magic happens. Absolutely.
It really is.
and I can definitely hear, you know, the Joni Mitchell, Joan Baez influence, just in terms of, you know, I think a lot of modern music, maybe artists feel like, you know, it needs to rhyme, and there needs to be like this iambic pentameter. And in your music, you're telling these stories, and of course there's melodies and everything, but as far as those other structures, you kind of just let those go and tell the story. I guess is that something that you've consciously thought about whenever you're writing? Like, I don't care if it rhymes. That's not what this is about.
Every now and then, you know, I've been really fortunate up till now. I'm really in the midst of a writing just I can't stop writing. I just song after song after song. Usually I have a melody in my head. Or I'll hear one word, and then I will find the story either from my own life or from somebody else's life or experience that I've had. And so I don't really think about it, but I do realize I am very conversational, I think, in the music, now that you mention it. it's really just what comes. Oftentimes I will play the melody over and over and over, and then I get a series of words that kind of fit in. So, but I have lots of other influence as well from, you know, even I think I listened to Morrissey. My complete my complete middle school years was only Morrissey or the Smiths. And so I'm sure that has a huge effect on my music. And then also pieces from Debussy art songs, Debussy, Fauré, some of that French music, I feel like has that same kind of feeling to it, that old cafe music at the time that's now considered classical. But at the time, they really were cafe artists like myself. So,
all right. And this kind of maybe relates to the, you know, the campfire songs and the people you meet there. But I noticed on your webpage, I was looking through the photos, and there were the photos of you that I expected to see. But there were several from like the mid-1920s of this like gypsy camp in Arkansas. And the first thing I saw when I thought of those is like, yeah, that's like the campfires at a music festival. Is that I just wanted to ask about why you put those on the site.
At one point I was going to name the album Gypsy Camp, so until I was advised not to.
Gotcha.
But I do relate to a gypsy. I think that, and as I get older and older, I've been fortunate enough to have kids and have a home. And a lot of artists don't have that because they've spent their younger years doing whatnot, but I've always really wanted to be a gypsy. My mother said I dressed like one. She'd have to chase me out the door when I was, an adolescent and try to change my outfit or my hairstyle for the day. So I definitely like big skirts. I like music around the campfire. I probably would live in a teepee if I had, I had my way. And you may see me in a gypsy wagon sooner rather than later.
All right. We'll get to the upcoming tour in a bit. I know there's probably not a lot you can tell us because it's still in the planning phases, but that should be really interesting. I wanted to ask also if you see yourself as kind of like an archivist or a historian through music. Because I see sort of what you're doing as preserving older songs and older styles of writing that, you know, maybe reflect really old aspects of culture that otherwise might just be lost to time.
I definitely feel like that. I definitely would like to be that. I feel it's very important for youth today, especially with the music culture that's out there, that they're getting fed with something of integrity. Also, something very important to me is really explaining the sensitivity of love and how fragile a young girl's heart can be. And, and I want people to understand that. I want people to kind of look at where we came from. I think that not that there's anything wrong with a lot of music today, but I really do like to perform the historical things because I think that they bring up points that especially about culture and about human interaction and the sensitivity there and also give us an appreciation for what we have today, too, not arranged marriages. And even though I might have fared better had my dad arranged my marriage.
Well, let's go ahead and hear our third song. And again, just tell us what we're going to hear and maybe a little about it.
How many songs do we have left today? I just want to pick and choose the right ones today. Is the last one, or we have time for two more?
Yeah, I think we're going to get up to six.
Okay.
That's my plan.
Right. Let's see. I heard something out of tune, so if you'll give me a second.
Sure.
This next one I'm going to be performing is called Unbroken Horse. Again, on that vein, it is a personal story, but it is really about first love, so, and how hard that can be. And it's called Unbroken Horse. I'm having trouble with my B string today.
Sure. Well, while you're doing that, I'm just going to go ahead and remind our listeners that the album release concert that she'll be doing on March 30th is going to be at Fit and Fuel Cafe in Naples. And the title of the new album is Master Key, and that is available for pre-sale.
Lost me, can anybody find me? This thing we want, this thing that's real. You were lost to me, but now I finally see. I've had you all along. It's a cognizant thread. Find me, 'cause I'm not home. And does anybody understand the way I nobody find you, 'cause you're not home. And does she understand the way you love like an unbroken horse? This is not the first time that I loved you. This is not the first time that I lost you. Baby, 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 now that I've harnessed this love, ride away with me.
Unbroken Horse, performed by our in-studio guest today, musician Elizabeth Lockhart. And that song is on her debut solo album, Master Key, which comes out March 30th, along with an album release concert that same evening at Fit and Fuel Cafe in Naples. Thank you so much again for coming in and playing for us. This is a real treat.
Thank you, John.
Tell me a bit about the album itself. What does the term Master Key mean to you?
Master Key is really, well, just like it is in old art and literature and music, you see it represented for really opening doors, mm-hmm. enlightenment. You're given the key to the city. For me, this is the culmination of my music career, really all the combination of style, and for me, really coming back home. For many years, I did locally cover bands, and as well as my own other original projects that were not really my heart. They were beautiful. They were great. I really enjoyed them, but they really weren't where I am home. And so the master key for me is really the unlocking of my own heart and finding the courage to put all those things together and to put my songs out there just how they are, and not be afraid to combine all those elements and go for what I truly, truly love.
Yeah. In a way, do you see this as kind of a concept album? And by that, I mean these songs certainly hold their own as individual narrative stories or tone poems. But if we listen to them in the specific order that you've carefully placed them in on the album, does this convey a larger or broader story?
I definitely do think it does. It is really the story of, you know, love, so loss, and then ultimately redemption. Mm-hmm. I think through our tragic times and through our pain, we grow as people and we gain knowledge and we gain that master key, that mastery over our own lives and our situations. And if young people could only know that there is an end to the tragedy and that, you know, through all of this, you do find enlightenment if you can take it not as pain, but as something that is more beautiful. It's the reshaping of the soul and oneself and really ultimately reaching that ultimate goal of self-love.
Right. And I wanted to talk about a specific song on the album. And you've already mentioned John Jacob Niles, and you have a cover of his on this album. And if I remember correctly, you actually were familiar with his music from like songbooks going back to when you were a kid. So kind of like your relationship with his music, I mean, this is like a decades old story.
Definitely. One of the songs in the album is called The Black Dress. And it is one of his original compositions. I think it was probably the third song I ever sang when I took voice lessons. And it's in a young singer's book. So people that have studied like me will most definitely recognize the song. I've done my own arrangement on the album to change the timing, I think, to 3-4 rather than 4-4 timing.
And it's a duet as well.
It's a duet. I was really very fortunate to get to perform the duet with a folk legend, in my opinion. His name's Chuck Brodsky, and it is really my favorite piece on the album. Chuck has a real Dylan-esque voice, and so it was a real great match with my sort of Joan Baez. Mm-hmm. And so you have this gruff man perspective, and he really brings a very kind, intimate feeling to the song, just with a man, a sympathetic male perspective, which I think is very powerful. He does one of the verses on the song, and it's quite exquisite.
Was it originally a duet, the John Jacob Niles version, or was that another change that you decided to make it your own in that way?
It was not. I really wanted a masculine presence somewhere on vocally, somewhere on the album. I think it's a nice relief from my voice, and so I think it really hit the sweet spot, and I'm real proud of our arrangement. He also plays a nice kind of saloon-y piano part on there. It's really pretty.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and hear another song from the album today. And again, just let us know what we're going to hear.
All right. Well, I think that I'll do... This is called Birdwatcher. It is a song partly in French and partly in English. It was written for one of my old bass players I used to play for, and his girlfriend at the time was a bird watcher. And so, you know, I would hear their little love saga every day, and it just kind of, and she was very free and watched birds. So I'll give you a little bit of the translation. So should I believe the girl in the trees, to even the birds, you are all woman. Oh, tell me of this thing called love, is it certain for real? Should I believe the girl in the trees? My love, my missing heart, with her head in the clouds, she can see my soul. You are gentle and free like the birds that you watch. And should I trust the girl in the trees, with her head in the clouds, she can see my soul. And then the last part of it is, should I believe the girl in the trees, or will you fly away like the birds that you watch?
Wow.
So this is called Birdwatcher. Tell me of this thing called love. Is it certain for real? Ce sous je crois, vit dans les heures. Avec sa tête dans les nuages, il peut voir mon homme. My love, mon cœur, mon corps, les oiseaux, tout en forme. Avec sa tête dans les nuages, il peut voir mon homme. Mon cœur. Comme les oiseaux que tu observes.
All right. And if you just recently turned into our show today, we're listening to singer, songwriter, and guitarist Elizabeth Lockhart. And we just heard her song Birdwatcher. And that's going to be another song on her upcoming debut solo album, Master Key. And she's going to be performing an album release concert on March 30th at Fit and Fuel Cafe in Naples. And of course, listeners are invited to join the conversation. Phone lines are open at 877-428-8255. That's 877-428-8255. GCU Talk. And you had mentioned before that you're currently in kind of something of a writing frenzy right now, sort of a creative explosion. I'm wondering, you know, if you have the available musicians, the studio time, how many albums do you think you could record right now just with what you've built up?
There's at least two more on the horizon, as long as I can fund them, okay.
Right.
I can fund them. It's going to be great.
And I know in your personal life, you have three children. I think two of them are old enough to have fledged the nest, the youngest still celebrating single-digit birthdays. So I'm wondering if you've made it a point to try and foster kind of a love and an appreciation of music and music performance, you know, as part of their upbringing, or do you think maybe just having you as a mom kind of did that all by itself?
Well, unfortunately for them, they really had to listen to me play things over and over and over again.
Yeah.
One of them, my son, is definitely not going in that direction at all.
Okay.
He is going to be an entrepreneur, he tells me. My oldest daughter is an artist in every single way, a fine artist, a musician with a great ear, a great singer. I know that she would definitely like to follow in my vein. And my youngest daughter is pretty much the spitting image of me, as far as she is a triple threat, singer, dancer, actor, always theatrical. I'm sure that you will probably see her locally on stage with the Gulf Coast Players or something rather soon. She
all
likes
right.
to do all of the theater things. So yes and no, but they did suffer the sad folk song for a long period of time. And my oldest daughter had a great appreciation for the Beatles, I think because they were just so happy.
Right. And I wanted to ask about your guitar playing as well. I mean, because you really do have this distinctive, like, finger-picking style that, I mean, almost sounds reminiscent of a harp. And I'm kind of wondering when you decided to pick up the guitar.
Well, strangely, probably when I was about 17 years old, I think I actually got my first guitar that I owned. Way back when, though, it was really a tragic story. I had a guitar teacher, and I think I had two lessons with her, and she was wonderful. And then, unfortunately, she died. And after that, it was kind of a shock, and I did not pursue that after that, just voice. And that was a real shame. But at 17, I saw a Gibson Dove hanging in a guitar shop, a bright red Gibson Dove. And I knew that needed to be mine. And fortunately, I did receive that as a Christmas or birthday present. And that was really my first experience starting to write songs.
Wow.
Of my own.
Well, tell me about the album release concert coming up on the 30th, because today we're getting to hear these lovely and intimate kind of stripped down versions of the songs where it's just you and your voice. But on March 30th, we're going to get the full band effect.
Well, I shouldn't have done this to myself, but I did.
Okay.
And we have my lovely college friend coming in. She's a concert pianist and a harpist.
Wow.
She'll be flying in from Texas to participate in the concert. So we'll have a full-size harp. I'm super excited. Thank you to Dickie at the Philharmonic, who's letting us borrow one of his harps. She'll be playing keyboard as well. I also have a bass player playing. I'll have one of my who I used to play in one of my other projects with. And then I have this amazing classical guitar player. Well, he really plays everything, coming from Miami. And he used to play in another one of my projects, a Colombian fellow, very talented.
Okay.
And I also have a cello player and a violin player. There's a lot of cello on the album, a lot of violin. String instruments are probably my favorite to listen to. So I definitely incorporated that and had, was really fortunate to work with some really great string players. So I think it should be a great concert. We will probably have one rehearsal where we're all together, and then we will have two. I'll probably have a couple rehearsals with each little group of musicians we can get together. But something like this, it's going to be challenging, and it's but it's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, but your voice and really a really dynamic mix of instruments, that's going to be fantastic. And I also know you've got a tour that you're planning, and I understand it's kind of in the early like booking and planning stages, so maybe not a lot of details about it, but tell me about how ambitious you want this to get. Like how large of a tour do you want this to be? How long do you expect to be on the road?
Well, this year I will definitely make it out to Kerrville in Texas, and so I will hit spots in between here and Texas. I also will be traveling up to North Carolina for Folk Alliance, which is going to be exciting. I'll be performing in a showcase there. And then also in Texas in September, there's a Folk Alliance there. So I plan on going on two or three little mini tours where I'll be heading up the coast of Florida and driving to each of those places. And then I will be hitting venues on the way.
All right.
And house concerts as well. So,
oh, nice.
Very exciting.
Yeah. And, you know, the album that's coming out, naturally, it's going to be available in download form, also CD and vinyl. And, you know, I know from other musician friends of mine who have cut albums, producing an album on vinyl can get expensive. So I'm wondering what motivated you to want to provide that option for your fans as well.
I think it's really the next option. It's the collectible option. I personally just don't like the CDs today. They they don't look as pretty as they used to. They're not as pretty as the vinyl. I have a record player, probably somewhat out of my own vanity. I wanted to have a record on vinyl. And also just because that's what I grew up listening to, the Joni Mitchell, the Joan Baez on the vinyl. And that's the vein my music is in. So I think it fits the vinyl. Also with the download, people don't carry around CDs anymore. They're listening to Spotify or right. iTunes or whatever they're listening to. And so I feel like it's more of a collectible piece. And I feel like more and more artists are doing the vinyl. I would like to actually get rid of the CDs for my next album and just do the album and the download cards.
All right. Yeah. Well, we are getting close to the end of the hour, so I think we're going to have time for one more song. But I'm just going to get some housekeeping out of the way first and remind our listeners that today we've been listening to singer, songwriter, and guitarist Elizabeth Lockhart. Her debut solo album, Master Key, comes out March 30th. The first single from that album, Lifer, was released last week and is available for streaming or download just about anywhere that you stream or download your music. Also, you can pre-order the album, as I did, on her website, ElizabethLockhartMusic.com. And again, that's available in CD or vinyl. And if you tuned in during our show today and would like to hear it in its entirety, you can tune in tonight at 9 after Radiolab to hear an encore broadcast. And you can always hear episodes in full on our website, GulfCoastLive.org. Our program today was produced by Mike Canary and myself. Our director is Richard Chinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm John Davis. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida. And Elizabeth Lockhart, before you take us out, tell us what we're going to hear.
This song is called, I've named it a couple of renamed it, so I'm looking at my sheet to hesitate there. It's called Singing in Portuguese, and it only has one little chorus in Portuguese. It's a love song, and it's really about, you know, that terrible moment where you basically move on. And then that person comes back, and it's too late. let me just tune up real quick. And I don't think we ever really fall out of love. Thank you.
here.